You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome back to Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. It has been too long. My name is Ross Uglow, and I am the publisher of Bison Report. Joining me today is Blake Ingebrigtsen. Blake, how are you, man?
It couldn't be better, man. It's football season, is it not? I mean, we've been busy. I mean, I know you've been busy, for sure. It is. No doubt about that. So, excited to get going again.
So, let's do the housekeeping stuff right away. No preview pod, no season preview pod. We're going to try our best to get out a show per week. So, as many of you might know, opened a indoor golf business in South Fargo, Golf NXT. Come check us out, golfnxt.club. Indoor golf season cometh. It was cold this morning, overnight low of 37 on Friday night. It is coming. In addition to that, took a coaching position with Concordia Men's Golf. That's a split season. We have work in the fall and work in the spring. So the plate got full. The podcasting time got narrow, and my ability to produce both the Bison Report show for Bison 1660 and this show twice a week does not exist. So for now, we'll be doing the Bison Report show. Find podcasts of that if you don't get up early in the morning enough for that. Then we'll do a kind of recap and preview show during the week, hopefully. Until such a time as our season is over at Concordia, and then we should hopefully get back to being able to do two shows a week, plus the Bison Report show. The Bison Report show is not an optional one. That happens 6 hours before the game. That's broadcast all over the Bison 1660 radio network, and that has to get done. So not that Bison Report radio doesn't have to get done, but that's going to be priority one, and then we'll get this show out once a week, hopefully go to twice a week once the Cobber golf season is over. So that, if you guys have been wondering where in the world is my Bison Report radio, this is the answer.
Yeah, that should be right around when the hoop season starts, right? I mean, October-ish.
Yeah, we're right now our season would end on October 6th, so we really would only have like a month left. I'm trying to coordinate one other event that might extend our season by like 10 days. But yeah, mid-October, so there'll actually be quite a decent chunk of football-only season, because hoop is really more like Thanksgiving than Halloween.
Right.
And we'll be done well short of Halloween.
Yeah, I forget. It does get a little chilly around mid-October, does it not?
Right, yep. So that's the deal. The other deal is that North Dakota State went down and started their season on the road. At the Citadel, a couple of, what I would call maybe destination games. I think this Citadel thing is just a part of a home and home.
Correct.
But Charleston is nice. Then, of course, you get the real destination game this upcoming weekend. We'll talk about that. But in a time, in an era where, no G5 will touch. I mean, no G5 has touched NDSU since Colorado State and Ball State, or in all of, like,
it's been a dozen years.
Right. They're not going to schedule what is most likely a loss for almost any G5 in the country. And then, even P4s, not really that interested either. Oregon is on the books. But when you can't do that, you must do something, right? Especially, and I hope they figure out at some point how to kind of balance NDSU's schedule. And I guess by that, I mean, it would be nice if they would split South Dakota State and UND.
And that's coming.
Sure. So this year, not a super high profile home schedule. It just isn't. SEMO is fine, but that's your non-conference game at home. And then UND's in Grand Forks. South Dakota State is in Brookings. It's just not the home schedule. So the trips to Charleston, the trips to Nashville, I think provide some value to the Bison fans that still love live Bison football, and I think was a good job of creating a schedule in a non-optimal like league year, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I put out a tweet the other day because I was looking through schedules and I'm like, give me Boise. But obviously, like in my head, I'm like, that ain't happening. Come on now, like that ain't happening. But it's not just this year, the destination games, because I do think they get better as far as like quality. Because Incarnate Word is next year, they go to San Antonio, you know, they go to Vegas. There will be another road game in 27.
Yeah, they're doing a great job with the fact that G5 and P4s won't play.
Right.
So that certainly has to be, you know, applauded. So with that, I guess a brief recap or I mean, how much can you say about a 38-0 game? But what were your main takeaways? I think everybody noticed, obviously, no score in the first quarter. It's monsooning. Cole Payton looks questionable. Some folks jumping the gun on that. I mean, we got to be able to make it through at least like two quarters before we start casting aspersions. But what did you mostly take away from that? And then we can get into some you know, specifics.
Yeah, the insatiable Bison fan base. But no, Cole Payton looked fantastic. Nathan Hayes, man.
Yeah, it's not helping.
He throws some bullets out there, and that's as good of a problem as they're going to have at the quarterback position. But defensively, Logan Kopp was the best player on the defensive side of the field. I mean, I know, like, we looked at the PFF stuff, and Nate Staling was fantastic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those two, incredible. I really have – they didn't cross midfield until the third quarter. Not one time did they cross the field until, like, 2 minutes left in the third quarter. That's insane. And I know the Citadel, like, they're not great. They can't throw the ball. But still, I mean, for this defensive unit to play the way they did, and they're young, and, like, they only have six seniors on that side of the ball. I think that's very, very encouraging, regardless of opponent. So that's my takeaway is the defense.
It is encouraging, and when you have questions at defensive tackle, and I don't think there's any questions at defensive tackle with the starters, but they're not going to play the whole game. That's not how defensive tackle works at NDSU. It's not how it has worked in a long, long time. You know, Duty and Keenan Wilson, that's as good as it gets from a talent and experience. Like if you melt talent and experience together and get what you would like to get out of a tackle tandem, like Keenan Wilson and Duty are great. But after that, you've got questions. And what do you need if you have some questions at defensive tackle? Well, you need that Mike and that Will spot to be really, really good. And if you're not kept completely clean by the defensive tackles in front of you, can you make a play? And Staling showed, I mean, God bless Jackson Hanke. But, like, that was the conversation when your Mike was 219 pounds, 218 pounds. And you see Staling now at 240. He'll knock a center off his path and just go get the running back, even if the defensive tackle didn't hold the double team. And that's, I think, really impressive. Logan Kopp obviously playing super well. And then you've got, you know, Woolen and Ray James at that detached linebacker Sam position. I thought he played well. And not that the defensive line didn't play well, but just how impressive those off the ball linebackers were. And then, boy, they have a man child in Elijah Wayne. That's really, really exciting.
Yeah, you talked about D-tackle, and, you know, it's like the what if game. Like, it's just a waste of time to say, like, you know, Cody this if he didn't, you know. But Elijah, like I asked Paulus like yesterday, first true in 22 years, Justin Frick. Ross, I wasn't even alive when Justin Frick made his debut.
I was.
That, which is just crazy. I mean, that is like the one position where there's just no true freshman play.
Right.
And
the other one is like offensive tack. It's like Billy Turner.
Yeah. The only other one I think it would be tight end. Like, I don't even know who the last tight end would have
sure.
been. But
sure.
It's, yeah, he, so I talked with him yesterday and my audio file failed me. So probably not going to be a story on that. But his recruiting profile for our 24/7, he was listed at 230 pounds. He's 275.
Yeah.
And when you look at him, he's like, oh man, this kid doesn't look 18. He's a problem. I know he's not, I don't think he was listed on the 2 deep. I believe it was Vanderpool and Larson.
That's but, I cautioned you against that. And
right.
You've been around long enough to know that the 2 deep has usually seniority.
Right.
And they probably won't mess with it until conference play to have it actually reflect what's going on. But yeah. And I think the common sense of an FCS fan would tell you, you know, that the transfer from Iowa State would get like the fourth position.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
I don't even know if he played more than 3 snaps.
I don't know that he did either. But that's like, you would assume that an Iowa State transfer would play over a true freshman. It's just not the way it works all the time.
Well, who was that guy at South Dakota State, that tackle, Hicks?
Yeah, Marcus Hicks.
Same kind of thing. I mean, it's like, well, we got Christensen and the Park River kid, Hagen.
Yeah.
It's like, well, he might be fine, but he also might not be. So
I remember Bison fans thought the sky was falling when Marcus Hicks transferred to South Dakota State.
Did he even play 200 snaps?
I don't think that he did. Just goes to show you, you know, this is it's not every case, but usually if a player is not good enough to play at a Power Four, they're not usually good enough to help an NDSU. Maybe a little rotation depth, but very seldom. Because, like, Tamarick Williams played. He just didn't play enough. It's these guys that are at the bottom of the roster, like, not helping Power Four teams. Very few examples of those guys that have come in and made a huge impact at NDSU. It's very, very rare. Like, God bless him, the corner that came in this year from Texas Tech.
Oh, Jalen Peoples.
Expected to just start and then wasn't as good as the corners that were already at NDSU and went, all right, I'm gonna exit stage left, and then they have to go to the JMU kid, who I thought actually played pretty well.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the other, because like, they got 2 Gophers transfers. They got, you know, and like Alex Elliott's out for maybe the year. Yeah, I think he would have been the only one to get like rotational time.
Yeah, maybe. And Cortez LeGrant got at least a carry, you know, but he's behind the Kennesaw State
kid. He's RB5.
Right. He's behind the Kennesaw State kid. He's behind OJ. He's behind BK. And we're not here to run down transfers. That's not the point that I'm making. It's just I think the perception of, oh, they got a D tackle from Iowa State. He'll either play or be the first guy off the bench. It's just not always the way it works, man. Sometimes big schools miss, and combing the bottom of those rosters to try and find dudes is hard, and it doesn't work out the way that you want. And just be thankful that NDSU, when they're fishing in the portal, is usually fishing for depth and not starters. Like, what like, is there a transfer starter on this year's team? I don't think so.
I don't believe so.
Fraley would be the last one that comes
correct
to mind.
Yeah, which is kind of impressive to do that on the O-line, I think, which is another topic of matter from Saturday I thought was interesting. But DJ Scott's probably the closest one, him and Booth, but they're twos.
Yeah. So I asked Coach about that, and I got him a little riled up. That was unintentional. But just like, when do you want to have your five? And he referred to some Bison teams, and they did. They had Austin Kuhnert would play some guard and play some center. they had a really good center too. Lund, Joe Lund. That those guys would move around. You know, there was certainly the year that Jack Plankers rotated in, certainly the year that, and usually the guys that rotate in, then it become like, because there's a year that Cody Malk played Ogre and rotated in, and there's years that, you know, they'll play six, maybe seven guys. And maybe this is a year that they play eight guys because they like Lewinsky and they like to try Empey at tackle and they like whatever they like. Doesn't matter. You know, Babbitts or whatever it may be. But the word that gets used a ton with offensive line is continuity. And I think while rotation is fine, you know, and D-lines rotate in and out, in and out, in and out, there's a reason that D-lines rotate in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, and O-lines don't, because continuity in passing off games and stunts and identifying protections and understanding, I got this guy, you got this guy, and comboing up on duo, et cetera, et cetera. All those things come from playing as one contiguous unit. And that was the question that I was asking. And I don't really care what, like, how he answered. That's not my point. But, like, normally you would like to have five. And normal, maybe you're rotating in at a spot. But I think you'd like to have five picked. And so I thought his comments were interesting. You know, you and I, you mentioned the Pro Football Focus stuff. Like, they did not love Megan. They did not love a lot of the run blocking work from the O-line. I think pass pro was pretty darn clean. Yep. But if you looked at the grading, and I'll tell you, I plan on hopefully looking at the film this afternoon as we're already to Wednesday. Hopefully being able to do that earlier in the week moving forward. But if you look at the grading from PFF, and they're not the gospel, and I wouldn't say that their best graders are maybe on this game either, but it's going to give a lot of credit to the backs. And I think you saw some of that. Like, I saw Barika Penu turn a 0 yard gain into a 14 yard gain. It's on the highlight tape. Like, there is plenty of stuff, you know, like coach would say, is it blocked for one or is it blocked for five?
Yeah.
That was the Marty Brown thing. And you just saw Marty Brown do that with Miami against Notre Dame. It's blocked for one, but he gets five. Marty Brown's brilliance was not 40 yard bursts. He had like three of them. He's not very fast. Marty Brown's brilliance was you could whiff and block for a 0 or a 1 yard gain, and he would get you six. That was Marty Brown's brilliance, and you saw some of that from the Bison, and I'm really interested to kind of get into the O-line, actually look at the end zone view and see what they were doing, because they did not grade out well in the run game, and you would think that in the Citadel, it would be one of the worst defensive fronts that they would see.
Yeah, you'd probably think that, right? But he said, well, never. And I was like, well, you know, to get down to five, he was like, well, never. And I was like,
that's not, yeah.
It's more than likely USD, I would say. After the bye, getting into conference play, it's your biggest game up to that point. Would imagine that's kind of when they want to get a closer
gauge, maybe. Right. And I understand what he's saying, right? Like, I get that he probably means that they want to have a feeling of competition run throughout the season, right? Like, continuous competition, I think, is important. But at some point, like I said, that continuity thing's important. Biggest storyline of the week was Cole Payton. How did you feel like Cole played?
You know, when he hurdled that dude there in the, when was that, the third quarter or whatever, it's a good thing I was home alone, because it was, I was not expecting that. But at the same time, I was, because, like, we saw it all of 2023, him just do ridiculous.
Like, I think his ball coach would like him to stop.
I think so. And yeah, he kind of alluded to that yesterday. Yep. Yesterday afternoon. But I mean, 100 yards rushing, there's like 17 quarterbacks occurrences where an NDSU quarterback's run for 100 yards in the last 20 years. He has four of them, and he's made one
in a reserve role.
Yeah. It's just crazy.
Yeah,
he looked really good. I think when the weather kind of subsided, or the rain kind of, you know, stopped going sideways.
Yeah.
You could kind of tell that it's like, all right, now it's time to hoop a little bit. And he was really on target with some of his throws. There was a deep out to, I think it was Harris. The two throws to Raja were really, really on point. He looked like he had great command. And the concerns that people were having in the first quarter when it was raining sideways, I think those were answered.
Well, and even with the monsoon, he averaged more than 10 yards an attempt. I mean, if you take out the two balls that basically the Chris Harris drop and the should have been pick six out of a wet ball over to Bryce Lance on the quick out, he would have been in 10 of 14 for 192 and a touchdown.
Well, I think Bryce had a drop too. Like a curl, and he just dropped. So that's another one.
I know, but I'm just talking about if you take away the rain drive.
Oh, yep, sure.
And when Chris Harris dropped actually kind of a decent ball.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think Cole just kind of couldn't get his hands on it the first time. But yeah, hard to grade out better than Peyton did, considering, you know, how things started. And it can certainly be argued that how things started, not really his fault. Thought it was fun to see, you know, a bunch of guys get an opportunity in the passing game. I tell you, the one kid that caught my eye, besides, of course, the prince that was promised, Nathan Hayes, was Reese Kessel, man.
Yeah.
If you're a Packer fan, and I tried to sort of get Tim to get there, but I couldn't. Everybody knows Tucker Kraft. Tucker Kraft, honestly, is like the most Bison tight end that was ever a Bison tight end. Like, he would have, I mean, he's killing it in the NFL. Obviously, he would have killed it at NDSU. But, like, his willingness to block, he would have been an unbelievable crew chief if they would have gone into that tiny town in South Dakota and recruited him. With that said, the Packers tight end that he actually, Reese reminds me of, is Luke Musgrave, who has, like, long limbs, tall runs, maybe not ready to run through your face in the run game yet, but he's like too big for safeties and too fast for linebackers. And you saw that in his, I know it was one catch, but you have to extrapolate that to, okay, what can this player be? What are his athletic traits? And if they did target him five or six times a game, what would it be like? And that's where I got really excited with Reese and his development, and interesting too that, I mean, it seems like he's jumped Jet Zabel, who Jet was like the guy in that recruiting class. Yeah. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Jet, and he might turn out to be an unbelievable football player, probably will, considering the pedigree and the effort level and stuff like that. But for Reese, as a former PWO, to already be making noise like this, especially since he's a local boy, like, that's exciting to me, and I kept getting Musgrave vibes from him high pointing the football there.
Would it even surprise you if he, because right now the two seniors, Diggins and Carson Williams, are, you know, the 1-2, but if by the end of the year, because like Finn Diggins a little banged up, Carson Williams was a little banged up in fall camp, if Reese Kessel becomes the guy in terms of, you know, production, I mean, would that be a...
No, and God bless, I have no issue with Carson Williams or Finn Diggins, but those guys have not been dynamic, and they're at the point in their career at NDSU. I'm not saying you can't break out late, but like, if they had this dynamic playmaking ability, we would know. And it's not that they can't make plays. And when there's so much to go around, like, you got to feed Bryce, you got to feed Raj, you got to feed the backs, blah, 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 blah. I always felt last year that all the tight ends, even Stuffel, was basically like, okay, we need you, it's third down, or here's a little flipper in the red zone for a snack, like, here's your touchdown. I didn't feel like Stuffel was a seam stretcher or really even a dynamic offensive weapon. I think Stoffel, Diggins, and Carson Williams were just like, hey, do your job. And they do, and they get after it in the run game, and they get stinky, nasty, dirty, and do all the things they're supposed to do. But as far as like, okay, I'm going to Josh Babbitt your ass and run down the hash, I think that's Reese Kessel. And if he ended up with the most yards, which, by the way, he's winning. If he ended up with the most yards, oh my God, he has Raj, Chris, Bryce, Reese. He has the only yards for a tight end because Conklin's a wide receiver.
Correct.
Yeah, he has the only yards for a tight end so far. So if Reese Kessel led the tight end room in receiving yards this year with his 31-yard head start, I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I think Stuffle was a great – he's the all-time leading receptions leader as far as tight ends go. But like you said, he was kind of more of that
– yeah, what sort? Where security, is the yards, where security is the yards per catch?
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's looking a little more slot receiver-ish as far as yards per catch, you know, the 9.4 instead of – 31-yard play action deep shots where he's cooking.
Right.
You know,
yep.
I don't even know who's guarding him, a linebacker or whatever, but yeah, I didn't remember that he was a walk-on.
Yeah. Yeah. Local kid, Davies, I think, if I had to.
South.
Okay.
And I believe he was.
Somewhere south of Main Avenue.
And I believe he was actually hurt.
Okay.
At one point. So maybe that had something to do with that. I have no idea, but it's once you get here, man. Who knows? Because, like you said, Jet Zabel, I remember sitting in this very room talking about Jet Zabel. Like, he's the get of this class.
They're big, tall, strong kids. They helped me move. They had J&R Solutions or whatever. This summer, the boys helped me out. They're great. But they're long, strong dudes. I mean, they're impressive kids. Yeah.
Gabe Cunningham's coming, too.
Yeah, it's a... And I think he probably brings some of that dynamic aspect as well. Will Gabe Cunningham? I think you might see tight end, man. You mentioned that as like a true freshman thing. You have to learn so much. I wonder if they're not going to try and four game him like the last four games of the season. If they're going to even try, because you got to learn what the fullback does. You got to learn what a slot receiver does occasionally. You got to learn what a Y tight end does. You know, an attached tight end, like. The playbook for those guys is so versatile. And when you talk about trade, shift, and motion, who do you think are trading, shifting, and motioning? Fullbacks and tight ends. Like, they're it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And that's why even I think Gindy and Babbo were so unique, was even as redshirt freshmen, they exceeded the normal expectation for that room.
Yeah, I'm just thinking Northern Iowa and St. Thomas. Ideally, those would be two fantastic games to use for redshirt.
Right.
So Exhibit A right there.
Boy, things don't look good in Northern Iowa right now.
No, they do not. Hopefully for their case.
I mean, that's a brand new coach.
Todd is. Yeah, Stepsis. Yeah. But if he can turn around, good for him. But it was not pretty last year.
Speaking of brand new coach, let's look forward. Let's talk about Tennessee State. It's hard for us, as it was hard for Polisek. He, I think, 83 new kids or something like that. So you can take the tape of last year's game in the Fargo Dome and just throw it in the trash. It means nothing. So obviously it makes it tough for us to break the game down. You know, Reggie Barlow, head coach, really interesting. Shout out to Vikings fans. Greg Williams. Bite the head off or cut the head off to kill the snake. Bounty gate, Greg Williams, the infamous Saints defensive coordinator from the 2009 Vikings team that wasn't, or Vikings Super Bowl team that wasn't. And he is now the defensive coordinator for Tennessee State. He's been an interim head coach. I think he was the head coach for the Bills, maybe, for something.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Right. But Greg Williams is obviously very aggressive. Not just from like trying to injure players, but I mean, he's blitz heavy. So we'll see what kind of personnel he has, and we'll see how, you know, that presents itself as a challenge. I think, you know, NDSU's 4 touchdown favorites is the last time I looked. And if I didn't know, you know, I'd be again, I mean, first of all, I would never, especially now coaching, but like, my recommendation would certainly have been like, oh, Bison and the points. They won that last game by 50. None of the players are the same, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. None of the staff is the same. And I think you're finding, though, that it's difficult to just flip the switch, man. Like, Wazoo looked terrible UNC looked terrible.
Yeah, it was not great.
I'm trying to think of like who tried to wholesale in a roster.
Well, Colorado, their first
Sacramento
year.
State.
Yeah.
Horrible. Like I think it's just really hard, man. And Colorado improved from being the worst Power Four team in the world to being a mediocre one.
I just meant Deion's first year.
Right, right.
They won three games that year. But then, you know.
Right. So it's hard to wholesale in a roster. Yeah. And I think that's what Tennessee State is doing. Now, but they were one of the worst teams in FCS last year, so why not wholesale in a roster? I guess I just mean like it didn't look good for a lot of high-profile teams that basically flipped their entire roster, and that's sort of what Tennessee State's doing.
Well, they did make the playoffs. Tennessee State did. I don't know how, but they did.
Isn't it large, or did they win their league?
I think they won the league.
Okay.
They lost at Montana by like three touchdowns in the opener, but yeah, and they were picked eighth in the OVC. The Citadel was picked eighth in the SoCon, and the SoCon is a better conference.
Interesting. Okay.
So, I don't know.
I stand by what I said. That team was not good.
Yes, but I don't know. If, you know, Greg Williams cooks something up, if he makes things difficult on Cole or something, then who knows? But I don't see this being any closer from a 10.
You got to have kids that are ready. I mean, you had the greatest defensive coordinator of all time just give up 41 on national television to TCU.
Yeah, that's true.
Bill Belichick's the greatest defensive coach in the history of defensive coaches, and he just got cooked. You got to have kids that understand what they're doing. I can draw anything up on a grease board. It doesn't mean it gets executed.
And then, yeah. Well, I will say this offensively, though. Even if they do give them fits, Tennessee State beat North Carolina A&T. That was their opener last week by 3 points. They were the 14th out of 14 teams picked in the CAA. They beat them by 3 points. Outside of three plays, you know, Polisic mentioned two touchdown runs by the one kid out of 50 yards. There was an 80-yard touchdown pass was their other touchdown. Outside of those three plays, they had 59 total yards of offense. Not great. So limit explosive plays.
I was going to say limit explosive plays.
Which, easier said than done, of course. But
so, okay, let's wrap this up. We're at the 32-minute mark here. Give me something you're looking for on each side of the ball. And I'm going to get screamed at because special teams is supposed to be an equal phase, but offense, defense, give me something that you're looking at on each side of the ball specific to this matchup in Nashville.
I would say Cole again, offensively. Game two, again, he's facing a very good D coordinator, but like you said, can his players do what he's asking of them? But I want to see how he responds to that. Game two, it's not just one game. Like, can you put it together over multiple games? So that would be the one thing there. Defensively, it's the secondary. You didn't even notice the secondary against the Citadel.
They can't throw.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got zero gauge off of that. I'm confident in how the DBs are going to look, but we didn't see anything.
Yeah, you'd like to see it.
So that would be the one thing, because not worried about the linebackers or the front four.
Yep. So I'm definitely going to be paying attention on offense to the offensive line as well as you can with the broadcast, version of whomever is going to broadcast this game. But I know that they're going to have stuff in. I think it's probably going to be some aggressive run blitz, multiple 6-7 man pressures coming downhill, trying to get NDSU into third and long. I think you're going to see a lot of one, and I think you're going to see a lot of zero. And it's like Greg Williams is probably coming. So the ability for it makes things really interesting for Fraley. And what I mean by that is when you have different guys next to you at guard and different guys out at tackle, and sometimes your guard is playing tackle, you're calling out the mic. You're setting protections, you're setting slides, you're doing all those things. How good is the communication, but how good is the actual play? Like, if they run a tackle end stunt, how well does that work when you're shuffling potentially offensive linemen? Is it Tostead? Is it Schneckloth? Is it Lewinsky? Who is it? How well are they working with Bo Johnson and Fraley on the left side? How well is the right side of the line? Like, I want to see all of that. Now, if NDSU, despite any of the single high pressures that I imagine are coming from Greg Williams, if those don't matter and they can run the ball, then it doesn't matter. But I'm interested to see if it gets to third down and they're running exotic pressures, how cool and calm and collected is the offensive line. Yeah, defensively, I'm with you. I'd like to see the pass defense. I'd like to see the pass rush. I'd like to see what that's like if there's any point in the game where the game script isn't, you know, super sloppy. Like, is it ever 14-7 NDSU and Tennessee State has the ball? Or is it just a murder? And that's, you just never know.
Yeah, and that's not something that they had to deal with last year, was it? I mean, because you had five in the O-line, so
right,
there was no shifting. It'll be a challenge for Fraley, but I think they'll be fine. I mean,
absolutely.
I think the talent gap will fix itself.
All right, let's wrap things up here. Why don't you hit me with your prediction?
I think we're seeing a lot of what we had last week. A lot of guys are going to get to play. That's probably the hope right now for a lot of us and a lot of Bison fans. And I see a very similar score. I'm going 45-10 Bison.
Yeah, I've got 41-7 Bison. I think this defense has some stank to them, and I'm excited about that. Thank you so much to our sponsor, Gateway Chevrolet. Thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend, and go Bison!